This episode of Shameless is brought to you by Pureology's Hydrate Collection, a collection that cleanses your hair while infusing it with essential hydration, leaving it feeling silky smooth. The woman who inspired the final track on Taylor Swift's new album, The Tortured Poets Department. So we wondered, who was Clara Bow? The answer took us on a fascinating path. Welcome to Scandal from Shameless Podcast, the stories of the biggest celebrity controversies revisited.
Hi.
I'm excited about this one.
I am really excited. I again, much like I think Elvis and Priscilla, to be really transparent with the listeners, we hadn't intended to do two parts on this.
No.
We didn't think that there was going to be enough there. We wanted to do an episode because of Taylor Swift's album, which we'll get into in a second. And then when we started digging, we were like, there is so much here. Once again, trust us. Let us take you on this journey.
Trust us because it's funny. We obviously, the process with Scandal, just to take people on a little bit of a journey, is we decide the topic with Eilish. Eilish goes away, does her incredible pop culture journalism stuff, her research, brings it to us. We read the research and then we kind of workshop it from there and sometimes flesh out bits, whatever. I couldn't stop reading. When Eilish sent us this document for the first time maybe ever, I was being really inefficient that day because I had other things I had to go on with, but I could not stop reading Eilish's notes on this woman.
Well, Eilish was desperate for us to do two episodes on this. She kept pitching it to us saying, please, yeah, there's so much here. And the minute we looked at it, we were like, there absolutely is. So I'm really excited for you guys to listen. I mean, obviously, I mentioned earlier that it's Taylor Swift, of course, that prompted us to do this. When she released her track list from her 11th studio album, of course, The Tortured Poets Department, which is out this week, everybody was quite intrigued by one of the titles. It was, of course, track 16, Clara Bow.
Yeah, so many people wondered what the song was about and what the connection is, including Clara Bow's own family. So her great-granddaughters did an interview with People magazine and said they're fans of Taylor Swift. Their quote reads, "We could not believe it. No one from our family has been contacted or knew about this prior. We found out via the Instagram post like everybody else."
Yeah, they went on and said, "We just want to know what prompted it and where the connection is coming from." I mean, them and everybody else, I think. We had the same conversation within the walls of our office. Like, who was Clara Bow? Why was she so important? What's the story that Taylor is trying to tell here? And I think for us, first and foremost, who is she?
Yeah.
And so we started to dig. And when we started to dig, as we told you, we found quite the story.
Yeah, it turns out Clara Bow was a huge figure in the celebrity space. This story will take us back over 100 years ago. I think it's the oldest story we've ever covered on Scandal. But truthfully, it's also one of the most fascinating stories as well. Before we get started, we wanted to point out a couple of major sources that we used in researching this episode. Because of how old the story is, there's not a heap of reliable resources about Clara Bow, but there are a few. Unfortunately, a lot of the films she starred in have been lost or decayed beyond playability, forgotten by the major movie studios that made them.
Yeah, the most significant and kind of thorough biography of Clara Bow is Runnin' Wild by David Sten. Now, this was published in 1988. He conducted countless interviews with people who actually knew Clara, and that's where we found a lot of the quotes and information used in this episode. The next source is a pretty interesting one, actually. In 1928, when Clara was 22, she did a tell-all interview with a magazine at the time called Photoplay. In this interview, she basically told her own life story. Now, for someone who became extremely wary of the press as she aged, this interview is really invaluable when it comes to telling Clara's story.
Mm.
When it comes to Clara's story as well, there will be stories within this episode and the next one of sexual assault, suicide, and domestic violence. So it may be triggering for some listeners. So keep that in mind before you keep listening.
Yeah, take care of yourselves. We are going to be rewinding, guys, to 1905.
Alrighty, Mish. Clara Bow was born on July 29, 1905 to parents Robert and Sarah Bow in Brooklyn in New York City.
Yeah, back in the 1900s, Brooklyn was not exactly the cool hipster haven that we know it to be now. The Bow family were desperately poor and they lived in a set of cramped, extremely run-down apartments that were called tenements.
Yeah, now as per Runnin' Wild, unrestricted by building regulations for fire, health and sanitation codes, tenements crammed a maximum of tenants into a minimum of space. Apartments were closets with no ventilation, windows, or sunlight. In the tenements, it was said, the sun was ashamed to shine.
Yikes. In the tenements, disease was rife, building fires were frequent, and death was common. Clara's mother, Sarah, had actually had two babies before she had Clara, but both sadly died. According to Clara Bow, years later, one lived 2 hours, one lived 2 days.
Yeah, Sarah Bow was told by her doctors that she must never have any more children as it could kill her. Clara told Photoplay decades later, she didn't want me. I don't suppose two people ever looked death in the face more clearly than my mother and I the morning I was born. We were both given up, but somehow we struggled back to life. Clara adored her mother, but Sarah Bow was not a healthy woman physically or mentally.
Yeah, we're going to pause here for a second and rewind slightly. We need to tell you about Sarah Bow's life before Clara entered. For context, at 16, Sarah Bow fell headfirst out of a second-story window as she tried to pick grapes from a vine. She nearly died, but this was just the beginning of her suffering. It's also worth mentioning here that according to Runnin' Wild, Sarah's mother, so now we're talking about Clara's grandmother, had completely lost her mind due to regular beatings from Clara's grandfather. So in 1900, Clara's grandfather was so ashamed of his wife's insanity that when it was time for the census, he reportedly forced her to hide in a closet and pretended that she was dead.
Yeah, it's so awful. And I think that says a lot at this time that death was preferable to mental illness. Back to Sarah, though. Clara's mother. In 1902, Sarah married Robert and moved into the tenements. When Sarah was pregnant with Clara, Robert actually briefly left her. According to Runnin' Wild, their marriage was loveless and Sarah would often make fun of him for his dreams of becoming a singing waiter. When Clara was born and it became clear that she was going to live and so was Sarah, Robert returned to the family home. And after Sarah's father, so Clara's grandfather, I know there's a lot going on here, but stay with us, committed her mother to an asylum, he moved into the Bows as well. So we have Clara, her two parents, her grandpa, all living in a single room apartment.
Yeah, Sarah, so Clara's mother, hated her father for the way that he had been abusive. But strangely, little Clara and her grandfather developed a really special relationship. Clara's parents largely resented her. They didn't give her a lot of love. Meanwhile, her grandfather, despite his abusive past, lavished love and attention upon Clara Bow, even building her a swing in their apartment.
Yeah. Now, one of the first major traumas in Clara's life occurred in 1909 when she was 4. Her grandfather was pushing her on that swing when he suddenly collapsed and died the next day. It's obviously a tricky story because we know her grandfather was a violent, abusive man. But to Clara, from everything we've read and researched, he was really the only loving family member she had. After he died, Clara's mother, Sarah, told her that she had wished it was her who had died instead.
Yeah. In 1911, Sarah, so again, Clara's mother, fell down a set of stairs at the tenements and reopened her head wound that she'd gotten when she fell out of a window as a teen. After this latest traumatic injury, Sarah began suffering from what we can now probably call seizures, though she was never properly diagnosed. Sarah was having around 3 seizures a day. On top of that, she was behaving erratically and would constantly remind Clara how much she hated her. Robert, Clara's dad, would leave the small family for months at a time, but when he was at the house, he would beat Clara.
Yeah, little Clara was left to care for her mother and keep house as best she could. And even though her mother openly hated her and her father wasn't around most of the time, she has said that she idolized both of her parents. Here's what she said about her mother. I loved her terribly. Her beauty to me was something divine. When she was mean to me, and she often was, though I know she didn't mean to be and that it was because she couldn't help it, it broke my heart.
Mm.
Now, when Clara was around 8 years old, she actually became good friends with a little boy named Johnny, who also lived in the tenements, Mish.
Yeah, one day after school, tragedy struck again. According to Clara, her friend Johnny had ventured too close to the fireplace in his apartment and his clothes had caught fire. Clara was 9 years old when this happened, and her quotes on it suggest it was really traumatic and awful because she actually watched him die.
Yeah, after these early traumas and with a really chaotic home life, Clara developed into a timid and lonely child. She also developed a stutter. Now, she didn't speak of this until much, much later in her life, but she did claim during periods when her father left the family, her mother was a sex worker and brought strange men into their apartment to sleep with them. She told Clara that these men were her uncles. In Runnin' Wild, the author David Sten also found in his research that decades after it happened during therapy, Clara shared that her father had raped her when she was a teenager.
Yeah, Clara remained adamant for her entire life that everything her parents ever did was because they loved her, despite, of course, us having a lot of evidence to the contrary. Runnin' Wild called it reinterpreting reality, which, I mean, I guess we can only interpret that as a survival mechanism.
Oh, completely, 100%. Now, the only thing in life that brought Clara any comfort was the movie theater. According to a BBC documentary called Clara Bow, Hollywood's Lost Screen Goddess, Clara was among the first generation to have actually grown up watching movies. She would actually beg her father for enough money to go and see the latest films and express to anyone that would listen that she wanted to be a movie star. It's worth mentioning here as well that Sarah, Clara's mother, despised Clara's ambition, Mish.
In the 1900s, there was a societal misconception that women who wore a lot of makeup were sex workers, and because actresses wore a lot of makeup, women like Sarah saw them in the same basket, which of course we know is, there is a lot going on here, a lot of layers going on here, because reportedly, Sarah was a sex worker at the time that she was admonishing sex workers. Sarah reportedly told her daughter, "You ain't going in the pictures, you ain't going to be no whore." Sarah also called her daughter the ugliest little mutt in the family and told Clara that she had no talent whatsoever. As per Runnin' Wild, the child listened to her mother's taunts and believed them.
In 1919, Sarah's health severely declined and the Bows couldn't afford a specialist doctor to tell them exactly what was going on. Now, Robert suspected that Sarah had simply gone mad, just like her own mother had. It was around this time that Sarah first threatened to kill Clara as she scrubbed clothes in a wash tub on the balcony. Reportedly, she crept up behind Clara and whispered, "I think I'll kill you. This is a terrible world. You'd be better off dead." At this point, Clara was about 13 years old. Clara left school after this incident and was forced to find work by her extended family, who the Bows were now living with. Sarah couldn't be left alone, and Clara certainly couldn't be left alone with her unstable mother at such a young age.
Yeah, so extended family stepped in. Things were bleak. I think that's understating it, given everything we've just covered. But luckily for Clara Bow, her big break was just around the corner. Because Clara loved the movies so much, she kept up to date with the entertainment world by reading movie and fan magazines. In January 1921, one of these magazines, called Motion Picture, announced that it was running a competition called the Fame and Fortune Contest.
Yeah, now the first prize in this contest was a part in a movie. Without her mum's knowledge, Clara actually begged her father for the money to take the photos of herself that she needed to enter this contest. At this point, she was 16, and she delivered the pictures in person at the Motion Picture office, and it made a pretty good impression with the manager there. He wrote, "Called in person, very pretty underneath her photos."
Not that Clara knew that at the time. For all she knew, she didn't have much hope of winning the competition. She told Photoplay years later, "Every bit of reason I had, every logical thought process I followed, told me I had no chance to win any contest to enter Motion Pictures. It was silly to even dream of it. There wasn't a single person there who knew me, except my dad, who wouldn't have laughed long and loud at the mere idea."
Despite her doubts, Clara was named as a finalist alongside a slew of other young women. She was required to do a series of screen tests, and although she assumed she'd be cut in every round, she just kept getting through. Unbeknownst to Clara, the judges loved her. Here's what they said about one of her screen tests. The rapidity of her improvement is scarcely credible. She is plastic, quick, alert, young and lovely. Her features are photographically excellent.
God, I love reading passages of prose from the 1920s. It's crazy. So different. I'm going to get up some photos of Clara Bow when she was young because everyone talks about how striking she was and how gorgeous she was. It's really interesting. She's got this like incredible, youthful beauty, I would say. And I would say it's her eyes. Like she was clearly, we haven't even spoken about this yet, but she was in silent films. Her eyes are so doe-like.
I was just about to say it's that doe-like quality that is spectacularly striking when you look at photos of her. Now, eventually the judges narrowed it down to just Clara and one other young woman. The pair did their final screen tests and were sent home to wait for the results. That night, Clara told her mother about the competition. After she learned about what her daughter had done, Sarah had an episode and told her, "You are going straight to hell. I would rather see you dead."
3 days later, Clara found out that she had won. She was going to be in a movie. Clara said, "It was hard for me to believe. I kept thinking they'd changed their minds, and every time the postman stopped at our door, my heart stopped beating. They told me the judges had picked me because I was different and had a unique personality." Guys, after the break, we are going to tell you about how Clara hit the big time. But first, a word from today's sponsor. Now you know I'm It's a frustration we hear over and over again. You've just coloured your hair, ready to show off that fresh new look, only to find it's feeling dry and damaged. We often have to choose between having coloured or healthy hair, but that's where our friends at Pureology come in.
Yeah, that's right, Mish. They understand the struggle all too well, which is why they've developed their Hydrate collection to help us feel confident with our coloured hair without any worries.
Using Pureology's Hydrate shampoo and conditioner has been an absolute game changer. Washing my hair now feels like a treat rather than a chore. Not only does my hair feel silky smooth afterwards, it also smells so good.
Yeah, it's no surprise it's an instant mood booster because Pureology actually uses aromatherapy-inspired fragrance in this collection. It's got all the ingredients to make your shower smell like a relaxing spa. Who can say no to that?
Even better, this collection uses anti-fade technology to help with colour retention. That means no more feeling frustrated when you see your colour fade after every wash.
You want hydrated, healthy hair? This is a PSA for you. Get your hands on Pureology's Hydrate collection now and shop it online via Adore Beauty or in your local Pureology salon.
Thank you so much to Pureology for making this episode of Shameless possible.
Alrighty, Mish. So at this point, we feel like we should remind you that the movies, as you said, that we are talking about are all silent films. There was no dialogue. That technology hadn't been invented yet. It would be, and soon. But before we get there, we need to discuss Clara's incredible career as a silent film star. Interestingly, that incredible career did not actually begin with the role that she won through the contest.
Yeah, well, according to Clara, she waited weeks for the magazine to place her in a movie. She kept bothering them until they finally found something for her. She shot 5 scenes that she was required to do for the film. She impressed the director with her ability to cry on cue in particular. She never really found that difficult. She said, "It was always easy for me to cry. All I had to do was think of home." Although, fast forwarding a little bit, after watching the film when it hit cinemas, Clara discovered that every one of her scenes had been cut. She was devastated, not to mention embarrassed. I mean, she told the people in her life she was going to be in this film. It was her way out of her desolate upbringing, and yet she was cut from it.
Yeah, after learning that Clara had been cut from the film, Sarah, who had previously threatened to kill her daughter because she even entered the industry, seemed to get even more enraged. A few days after the film opened, she chased her daughter around the apartment with a butcher's knife. According to Clara, her mother told her in this moment, "I think I'll kill you. You would be better off dead. Motion pictures are terrible. I think it is my duty to kill you." A lot of sort of repetition with the death threats and the kinds of threat she was leveling at Clara.
And this feels like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, because after this incident, Clara wandered around New York City too terrified of her mother to return home. After a couple of days, Robert Bow had his wife, Sarah, committed to an insane asylum. 16 years earlier, Sarah's mother had been committed to the very same facility.
So you can see a cycle for sure. For sure. Although it was a terrible disappointment, Clara Bow was not discouraged by her first experience in filmmaking. If anything, this all made her more determined to succeed than ever. She went from studio to studio in New York City, begging for parts. She said, "I wore myself out trying to find work, going from studio to studio, from agency to agency, applying for every possible part. But there was always something. I was too young or too little or too fat. Usually, I was too fat."
Eventually, 16-year-old Clara, I keep forgetting it how young she was so still tiny. At this point, she landed the role as a tomboy for a film called Down to the Sea in Ships. Playing a tomboy was the right fit for Clara, and this time she appeared on screen. And not just that, critics weren't crazy about the film as a whole, but they all agreed that she was the best thing about it. And so finally, there was a lot of buzz around her.
Yeah, here's what David Sten told the BBC about Clara's performance in this role.
She brought a naturalism to screen acting that hadn't been seen before, and she wasn't doing it consciously. She was a teenager with no training and no education. She was just doing what she knew how to do, and it was almost like a prodigy or a genius without understanding that.
So clearly just like this God-given natural talent.
Yeah, 100%. Now, just before Down to the Sea and Ships was released, Sarah Bow died. Her doctors attributed her death to epilepsy. She was only 43. Clara was around 17 at this time. Although she felt numb during the funeral service, Clara was absolutely devastated by the loss of her mother. As she reflected, "At the burial, I came to life and went crazy. I tried to jump into the open grave after her. I screamed and cried out that the other attendees were all hypocrites. They hadn't loved her when she was alive or cared for her or done anything to make her life easier. I raved and fought like a little wildcat. The thought of leaving her there in that hard, cold ground tortured my imagination beyond bearing."
Clara felt racked with guilt, knowing that she had pursued acting against her mother's wishes. She vowed to give up the movie business altogether until her dad convinced her otherwise. Clara was making more money as an actress, even this early on in her career, than Robert had ever seen in his life. So you can see why Robert didn't want her to quit. So she kept going. Clara landed a few more roles that year in New York, with her most successful being a film called Grit. It was written by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Of her performance, Variety wrote, "Clara Bow lingers in the eye long after the picture has gone."
In early 1923, Clara left New York City behind to move to Hollywood. Obviously, there's a fair bit more to this story, but here's what you need to know. Clara signed a deal with an independent film studio called Preferred Pictures, which was run by a man called B.P. Benjamin Schulberg. It was only a 3-month contract at a salary of $50 per week. Inflation calculator tells us this is the equivalent to around $923 per week. Back when film studios had individual actors under contracts. Now, I feel like we've spoken about this a little bit on Scandal before, but it was a very different industry.
Yeah, I think we spoke about this in the Natalie Wood series.
Yeah, you basically signed to one film studio and they decided what jobs you did and how many movies you did.
They owned you.
You couldn't do anything else.
Yeah.
They actually, these film studios, would often loan out their stars to other studios for a fee. So this is what happened with Clara. And it actually worked really well in her favor. So while she was under contract with Preferred Pictures, they loaned her out to a few different studios, a lot of them much bigger than Preferred Studios. And this turned into some pretty successful work.
Yeah, Clara was so good at what she did that Preferred Pictures loaned her out again and again, now at a fee of $500 a week. We're talking about American dollars, of course. That's the equivalent today of $9,235 a week. Of that, though, Clara pocketed about the equivalent of what we would see today being $3,600 a week.
Yeah. By now, Clara could afford to bring her father over to LA. And so Clara, Robert, and Clara's then boyfriend, a camera operator by the name of Artie Jacobson, moved into a 3-bedroom house on Hollywood Boulevard, a far cry from the tenements in which she grew up. If you're wondering about this boyfriend we've just dropped in, it was pretty taboo for Clara to be living with her boyfriend when they weren't married. Also, bear in mind, Clara was only about 17 years old at this point. But if there's one thing to know about Clara Bow right now, It is that she was spectacularly unconventional and didn't give a shit about the rules or societal expectations.
Not at all. One evening, a journalist visited Clara in her home for an interview. I mean, by this point, she's becoming a real celebrity. The journalist was slightly intrigued to find that Clara appeared to be living with a man out of wedlock. This is the 1920s. Like, this would have been scandalous 20, 30 years later still. So think about how scandalous it was at the time. Clara didn't introduce Artie as her boyfriend or anything, but I think the interviewer cottoned on to what was going on. The intrigue, though, was quickly overshadowed by a bizarre food fight that Clara and her father started having over dinner in front of the journalist.
Yeah, as per Running Wild, much of the macaroni missed its mark and hit the columnist, who was escorted, stunned and bespattered, to the door by an amused Artie Jacobson.
I was so random. Wait, by the way, we're going to check in a lot with Robert Bow over this series, Clara's dad, because he was, as Eilish put it, a total freak.
And then she wrote, like, sorry, but he was. Thank you for your commentary, Eilish. Now, as soon as Clara brought Robert over to Hollywood, he made no effort to find a job and told people that he was Clara's business manager. It's very likely he wasn't. He would accompany her to the studios when she was working and attempt to pick up other young actresses, telling them loudly, I am Clara Bow's father.
Ew.
It's also worth noting, in 1924, as a little aside, he actually met and married an 18-year-old on the same day. Not only that, he lied on the marriage certificate and said he was 38 when he was 49. These two divorced a month later. And that settlement and divorce saga cost Clara more than 6 weeks of her salary.
All to say, we don't love Robert Bow on this show. Now, here's David Sten again talking about Robert Bow for the BBC.
Her father's presence was a constant pebble under her shoe.
There's almost no way to talk about Clara Bow's father without being insulting, because he seems to have served no productive purpose his entire life, and certainly he was a malignant force in hers. He did nothing for her as a child, in fact, ended up doing far worse than nothing, and then he followed her to Hollywood, installed himself at her house, and lived off her money, and he was known to walk around saying, hello, I'm Clara Bow's father, especially to extra girls.
Robert Bow, like, he's just the fucking worst.
Well, David Sten is not beating around the bush there. Now, regardless of her dad's antics, Clara Bow was quickly becoming one of the biggest names in Hollywood. It seemed as though she was becoming the star of every film she was in, regardless of her original billing. In 1925, when she was around 20, the magazine that put on the contest that she'd won all those years ago, Motion Picture, put her on the cover. In the accompanying story, they published, the truth is, little Clara Bow shows alarming symptoms of becoming the sensation of the year in Hollywood. There is something vital and compelling in her presence. She is the spirit of youth. She is young America rampant, the symbol of flapperdom.
Oh, I just love it.
I love it.
Being a young person in the 1920s in America was quite honestly a lot of fun. It was called the Roaring Twenties for a reason. After the First World War ended in 1918, the American economy boomed, and after years of warfare, the public was letting loose. What followed was an incredibly fertile time for culture, with significant tech developments that massively changed the way the world worked. I mean, cars, radio, film, and soon to be sound in film as well.
Yeah. Now, in that article above, Clara was named the symbol of flapperdom. So it's probably worth, you know, talking about what a flapper even was. You may be aware of the flapper style of dress. Think Great Gatsby vibes. But flappers were much more than what they wore. They were young women who listened to jazz, were very fashionable. They were not interested in conservative values. They smoked, they drank, they gambled, they wore makeup, they cut their hair short. They had a casual attitude towards sex. Eilish's note is, basically, they slayed. We need to get
with like 100 exclamation marks. Basically, they slayed. Clara Bow didn't just play a flapper on screen. She pretty much encapsulated everything flappers represented in real life too. She drank, gambled. She dated multiple men at once. She even bragged about her dates' penis sizes amongst her friends. She was the ultimate flapper.
Yeah. Fast forward to around 1926. Now, Clara was 21 years old by this time, and she was the premier flapper and very, very famous. F. Scott Fitzgerald described her at the time like this: Clara Bow is the quintessence of what the term flapper signifies. Pretty, impudent, superbly assured, as worldly wise, briefly clad, there are thousands more patterning themselves after her.
This quote was given around the time that Clara Bow officially became the first It Girl. Yes, technically, Clara Bow was the first ever person to be considered an It Girl, and it all came about because of a movie called It. I am, to brief aside, obsessed with the concept of It Girls. I had no idea that term originated because of Clara Bow.
I know, me either. How incredible is it? The plot for this film was pretty run of the mill. It was based on a novella by Eleanor Glynn, who was generally believed to have coined the idea of it. For Cosmo, Eleanor explained what it was. She said, "The quality possessed by some which draws all others with its magnetic force. With it, you win all men if you are a woman and all women if you are a man. It can be a quality of the mind as well as physical attraction." This is BDE before we decided to use the term BDE. Like that idea of it's as much, you know, in the confidence as it is in the physical appearance.
It's your aura. It's also interesting that clearly being an it girl back in this time was an it girl attracts men, whereas now I'd say an it girl attracts women more than anyone else.
I completely agree. As the star of It, Clara was colloquially referred to as the it girl in the press, as the film so thoroughly defined what it was, she became synonymous with the whole idea.
Yeah, here's what Variety wrote at the time. "This Bow girl certainly has that certain it for which the picture is named, and she just runs away with the film. Clara Bow really does it all, and how." As the it girl, and as one of the best known flappers of the time, Clara Bow was developing a reputation. At this time, it was mostly positive. Everyone loved Clara. They were fascinated by her. And she was receiving around, wait for it, 45,000 fan letters per month.
Yeah, but with all this attention and a reputation for being a seductress, things wouldn't be perfect for long. At this point in Clara's life, she generally had at least two boyfriends on the go at once. Sometimes it was three. It does get a little confusing here, and it does get confusing to try and keep up with them all because all these dates tend to overlap. But we're going to try and lay this out as clearly as possible.
Yeah, here we go.
It's a bit of a riot.
By 1924, Clara had moved on from Artie, her first boyfriend. They remained close friends, though. The year after, in 1925, so at this point Clara's 20 years old, she met an actor called Gilbert Rowland when they starred together in a film called The Plastic Age. Speaking of Gilbert, in her photoplay profile, Clara said, "Gilbert was the first man I ever cared about. There isn't any reason why I shouldn't tell it, because we were both kids and we were engaged and we were so happy."
Yeah, so Clara and Gilbert were so in love that they were quickly engaged. Robert Bow wasn't happy about this development, mainly because he usually resented all of his daughter's partners for an unknown and strange reason. He was also openly racist towards Gilbert. In 1926, Clara worked on a film called Man Trap, which was directed by a man called Victor Fleming. Victor was like an extremely talented director who went on to win an Academy Award for Best Director for Gone with the Wind in 1939. He also directed The Wizard of Oz that same year. So this guy's a big fucking deal.
Yeah, and he's about to become a big fucking deal like 10 years after he meets Clara. But at this point, it's still 1926 and silent films were the only form of cinema available. And Man Trap marked the first time Victor and Clara had crossed paths. Astounded by her acting ability, Victor described her as the most natural talent he'd ever worked with. At 37 years old, he was nearly twice Clara's age. Victor became a bit of a father figure to her. And then soon became her lover. I hate it when things happen like that.
I know. As per Running Wild, "No man of Victor Fleming's stature had shown her respect or kindness, let alone love. Overwhelmed with gratitude, she gave him the only thing she felt she could offer in return, herself." So by 1926, Clara had two guys on the go, although according to Clara's good friend, Tui Lorraine, she would still go on dates with other men as well. I don't know where she found the time. In fact, Tui told David Sten, the author of Run and Wild, "The admirers came, my dear, in droves." Mm. One such admirer caused Clara quite the headache in 1926. His name was Robert Savage.
Not to be confused with her father, Robert. This is Robert Savage. So at this point, Robert Savage was 25 years old, married to another woman, and extremely obsessed with the idea of winning Clara Bow. He came to Hollywood with that express goal, and within 3 days of his arrival, had somehow managed to arrange a meeting with Clara through a mutual friend.
Yes. Now, during this meeting, Robert Savage told Clara about his life as a poet, and Clara shared about what it was like to be a movie star. At the end of the day, Clara concluded, he's a wonderful talker, except he talks too much about himself and his family. However, Robert Savage boasted to anyone who would listen about how well the date had gone, which greatly annoyed Clara, so she told him she didn't want to see him anymore. He was apparently devastated by this. Keep in mind he's married.
He's married to a whole other woman.
Honestly. And so he told a friend to tell Clara that he was thinking about killing himself over it.
Yeah. Clara was not fazed by this and said, don't worry, he won't kill himself. He thinks too much of himself. Robert Savage pleaded and pleaded with her for another chance, and unfortunately, she eventually relented. She said later that he actually had promised that this would be the last time he would bother her, and that's why she went along with seeing him on a second date.
Yeah, on their second date, Robert Savage attempted to drive Clara to an attorney's office so they could get a marriage license to get married. All the while, as we keep mentioning, he was married to another woman, and Clara was publicly engaged to another guy and having an affair with another different guy.
At first, Clara went along with it thinking he was joking. When she realized he wasn't, she told Robert Savage, don't be silly. I don't love you. I don't even like you. Take me home or I'll walk back. Eventually, Robert Savage did take Clara home and they did not get married. But unfortunately, it wasn't the end of him harassing Clara. In fact, it was only the beginning.
Yeah, immediately after she rejected him again, Robert went straight to reporters and told them how sad he was about being rejected by Clara. Then, in his words, he decided to do something desperate. He wrote a poem for Clara and hinted to his friends that he was so depressed about Clara that he planned to end it all. He sat on his couch, and this is kind of a clunky story, but roll with us, and superficially, and we can't stress that bit enough.
Superficially.
Cut himself and arranged himself in such a way that he would drip blood onto a photograph of Clara that he had artfully placed next to him.
Mm. Because he had essentially told all of his friends that this was his plan, the friends alerted his landlady, who then called the police, and the cops took him to hospital. Once in the hospital, he demanded once again to speak to the press. Again, reiterating, he is not deeply unwell, he is conscious. The press were more than happy to oblige. I mean, this was Clara Bow after all. And soon enough, this story about his stunt ended up on the front page.
Yeah, this whole situation and subsequent media coverage infuriated Gilbert, Clara's actual fiancé at the time. It probably annoyed Victor Fleming, her boyfriend, too. Now, it's clear that Clara had to speak to the press about this saga. She brought up Gilbert and said, I am engaged to Gilbert Roland. I don't love Bob Savage. The whole thing is ridiculous. Robert was transferred to the psychiatric ward in hospital and his family wanted to have him committed to a private sanatorium. Before they could do this, though, Robert had to go through something called a lunacy commission.
We don't have these anymore, but essentially a lunacy commission was like a court trial set up to determine whether or not someone was insane. Against her will, Clara was called as a witness in Bob Savage's lunacy commission. Here's what Robert said to the judge during this. I never wanted to die in the first place. I never had any intention of killing myself. I was just pulling some theatrical stuff to make an effect on her. I'll get her yet.
Yeah, as per Runnin' Wild, furious at Savage for exploiting their one-day dalliance into 2 weeks of headlines, Clara called a press conference of her own and spoke with characteristically quotable candor. Mr. Savage is just an episode in my young life. He says he tried to commit suicide because I turned him down. Well, let me tell you this. When a man attempts suicide over a woman, he don't cut his wrists with a safety razor blade, then drape himself over a couch with a cigarette between his lips. No, they don't do it that way. They use pistols.
What a quote.
Yeah, look, this is obviously the 1920s, so conversations and language is different these days.
I think we all know.
But I think we all know.
This is over 100 years
Sorry.
Ago. We're talking about a lunacy commission.
Sorry.
I love he had to be like, don't cancel us for something people said 100 years ago. If anyone tries to cancel us for that.
This is just the language. This is what people said at the time. I don't know what we're going to get cancelled over.
Now, this was a titillating story for the public and played into the idea that Clara Bow was a sex icon. A woman who men would, you know, go to the nth degree to try to get. It was a scandal, sure, but it was actually one where Clara Bow came out looking kind of iconic.
Yeah. Now, at this point in the timeline, it's 1926. Clara Bow's still only 21. She's the top of the world. She was the premier flapper of the 1920s. She had a fiancé in Gilbert and a boyfriend in Victor. She was unbelievably popular with all audiences at this point in time. As David Sten told the BBC, men and women liked her equally. With Clara Bow, men wanted her and women wanted to be her. So they all went to see the movies. I think that's what we're talking about when we're talking about the definition of an it girl.
Because of that universal popularity, Clara was just about to sign an absolutely massive contract with Paramount Pictures. This contract was very interesting. We're going to be talking about it a bit in this series because she was now at the height of her fame and Clara had some serious bargaining power behind her. Paramount wanted her. In fact, they needed her in order to assure that their films would succeed, but they were going to have to make some concessions to get her. Here's what some of that contract included as per Runnin' Wild. A ceiling on the amount of films she would have to make each year, six in 1927, then four per year through to 1931, no loan outs, no morals clause, guaranteed star billing, a specially designed wardrobe for each film, slate, first class return train travel to all locations for Clara and a maid, 8 weeks paid sick leave, $100 per week for Robert Bow in his capacity as special advisor, and $25,000 for Clara if Paramount failed to exercise its option prior to the contract's expiration in 1931.
Lot going on there. But all of that to say is it was very favourable to Clara. The contract included a weekly payment of $750 USD, the inflation calculator, which I hope is
You've been referring to this as like an official...
Because we've been referring to it a lot. Tells us this is about $13,800 USD in today's terms.
Per week.
Yeah. Now, this rate would increase over the years up to $1,250 USD by 1931. As for the details in the contract that you went through, Mish, there's one thing we need to zoom in on, and it's the lack of a morals clause. A morals clause is a pretty standard thing in most contracts ever, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It really just prevents a contractor from participating in any behaviour that might cause a scandal or bringing the company into disrepute.
Yeah. Now, as David Sten wrote in Runnin' Wild, if anyone needed a morals clause, it was Clara. Of course, Clara was a sex icon, and in just the last few months, she'd been publicly associated with multiple men, including her fiancé Gilbert and Robert Savage. And as we know, the story about Bob Savage had made headlines for weeks. It was pretty much an open secret in Hollywood that she also had Victor Fleming on the go. Controversial Clara was the last person you'd think who'd be able to negotiate a lack of a morals clause in her movie contract.
Yeah, but Clara's star power was so great that Paramount decided it was worth more to them just to have Clara under contract than to lose her to a morals clause. And I just don't think we can stress enough right now how rare this was at the time. So although this does sound absolutely fabulous for Clara, Paramount was able to sneak in a kind of pseudo-morals clause into her contract anyway. It wasn't as tight as a standard one. But if you remember that $25,000 we spoke of, which was the figure that Paramount would owe Clara if they decided not to renew her contract in 1931, well, that $25,000, which was going to be deposited into a trust in $500 weekly increments throughout her contract, hinged on Clara's conduct. So though they couldn't sever her contract if she fucked up, they could take away that money, Mish.
Yeah, as per the contract, she would receive that 25 grand upon the expiration of the contract unless, and I quote, she became involved in a public scandal or subjected herself to public scorn or ridicule or tended to offend the public sense of decency. So just keep that in mind. I mean, she's still making fat stacks of cash every week. This is like an additional trust, which is like a little bonus at the end.
Yeah, it's sort of like your nest egg.
Yep. Absolutely. So you'll remember that Clara was engaged to old mate Gilbert, who unfortunately hasn't copped many mentions so far. She was also seeing Victor Fleming. She actually kind of seemed to forget about her fiancé altogether, because after Clara signed her contract with Paramount, which Victor helped her negotiate, she actually told reporters that she planned on marrying Vicky, which was her nickname for Victor, in February 1927.
Yeah.
So she now had two fiancés.
I'm not quite sure. Now, in classic Clara fashion, a third guy was about to enter the picture. His name was Gary Cooper. He was a well-known, incredibly handsome actor who worked alongside Clara on a film called Children of Divorce.
I'll be the judge of that. I'm looking up photos of him.
Yeah, actually, I will too.
Gary Cooper in the movies. Oh, yeah.
No, he was. He
was a hottie.
Oh, he was very hot.
Clara, good taste.
Yeah. Now, they quickly began an affair. Clara later said, while he was doing rehearsals for Children of Divorce, we fell in love. It was very wonderful and beautiful while it lasted. Mm,
the affair with Gary was the final straw for Gilbert, the OG fiancé. Clara later said, that was the last of Gilbert Rowland. He told me he'd given me three chances and he was finished. For his part, Gilbert told Clara's father, who, remember, hated him and was apparently quite racist towards him, that he would always love Clara despite her philandering. He said, if she were only 26, God, how I would love her. But she's just a baby. She doesn't understand men and she doesn't understand love.
Clara openly boasted to her friends about Gary and her exploits. As per her friend, Tui Lorraine, she'd say that sort of thing to anybody. I had to listen to it night after night while she tried to go to sleep. Oh, Gary is so gorgeous, or so-and-so is wonderful, making gestures of size and whatnot and comparing two men. She did all that. Clara was a sensual woman, there is no doubt about that.
Gary Cooper, however, was not happy about Clara still seeing Victor Fleming. Victor was slightly more tolerant, but it was clear that something had to give between the two men. So Clara told a reporter, Gary was big and strong, but Vicky was older and understood me. I needed someone to soothe me. Vicky was like that. I mothered Gary, but Vicky mothered me.
Kind of works then. Eventually, it was Victor who won out over Gary, mainly, according to Clara, because of Gary's mother. She later said, his mother didn't like me and his mother ran his life.
Their affair was over after 6 months together. And finally, Clara and Victor were exclusive.
It wouldn't last long, though.
Not for long.
Now that they were exclusive, Victor wanted Clara to settle down and for them to get married. Clara, on the other hand, was only 22 at this time and wasn't ready for commitment. Clara was working harder than ever before. She also suffered from lifelong insomnia. And on top of this, she was expected to front up to the studio from 6 a.m. until midnight 6 days a week. So she's got to run three relationships on the go with the Sunday.
Well, the insomnia helps.
Oh, true.
She's not sleeping. So she's just jumping into bed with these handsome men.
It's incredible. It's amazing.
Go, Clara. She was utterly exhausted, though, and she was a bit lonely. As was the flapper way of life, she began casually dating again. As she moved from man to man, this was when the tide gradually started to turn on Clara's reputation. Gossip murmured between the surface, and you can imagine the kinds of things that were being said given this was the 1920s. One particularly cruel rumour linked Clara Bow to an entire football team at once. There was no truth to that story, but it was run by columnists around the country. The rumour was taken at face value and persisted for decades.
Yeah, this is one of those rumours that Clara struggled to get away from, despite the fact there was no truth to it. Now, this particular rumour did nothing for Clara's reputation, but at least at this point, her $25,000 pseudo-morals clause payout was safe. That didn't stop the industry from alienating her, though. As we know, Clara grew up about as poor as a person could be. She had a thick Brooklyn accent, which was considered uncouth by high society players she now found herself surrounded by in Hollywood. In fact, Bud Schulberg, the son of Preferred Pictures founder B.P. Schulberg, who now had a senior role at Paramount, told the author David Sten, there was one subject on which the staid old Hollywood establishment would agree. Clara Bow, no matter how great her popularity, was a lowlife and a disgrace to the community.
Jeez. Another actress from the time, Louise Brooks, spoke about Clara being ostracized from Hollywood in an interview decades later. Here's what she had to say.
She wasn't acceptable socially. Eddie Sutherland my husband gave absolutely the best parties in Hollywood. So I asked him one day to invite Clara Bow, and he said, oh, heavens, no, we can't have her. We don't know what she do. She's from Brooklyn. Everyone on the lot at Paramount said, of course, she's the greatest actress, but she wasn't acceptable, and she knew that.
It makes me sad.
I know. Because for all the talk about like liberal values and the sexual freedom of flappers, the double standard for women who were sexually active versus men was pretty stark. I mean, it couldn't be less shocking to me if we still talk about a double standard today. And Clara's attitude towards sex was really unattractive to the Hollywood elite. It was around this time in the timeline that Clara gave that tell-all interview to Photoplay, which was shocking at the time. Clara's candor was remarkable. She spoke all about her mother and the multiple occasions that her mother had tried or threatened to kill her, her various love affairs, her shocking and tragic upbringing. And this was the first that anyone had heard of this.
Yeah, a novelist called Adela Rogers St. Johns, who conducted that interview.
What a name.
Such a good name. Adela Rogers St. Johns later wrote, "I do not know why she talked as she did. Once started, she could not stop. It was though a dam had broken and the words poured out without volition, as though she had not for years talked to anyone who might sympathize and understand."
Her peers in Hollywood could not believe how honest she was in this interview. And rather than be impressed by it or empathetic about it, they were disgusted at her willingness to associate herself with such deeply shameful things like poverty and mental illness. Mm. At this point, Clara was being left off the invite list for her own movie premieres. Yeah. And it's strange. It was a sort of strange thing for the industry because the public couldn't get enough of her. She was mobbed in public but shunned by her peers.
Yeah, this popularity prompted Paramount to contribute a $10,000 bonus for each film she completed into a separate trust. So we've got a lot of things going on. As you said, Zara, the elite in the movie industry are shunning her. The public are loving her. Paramount, her actual
employers
are rewarding her because they're still seeing great output and great results from their film. The trust, though, that $10,000 was being deposited into, did come under the same stipulations as the one that held the $25,000. So it could be taken away based on Clara's behavior and reputation. I pivot away from that because we need to talk about the next man on the scene.
Yes, it was after a small surgery that Clara met a 26-year-old doctor called Earl Pearson. He was a married man who she promptly started an affair with. Now, in classic fashion, Robert Beau called him a son of a bitch.
Yeah. At this stage, Clara was working harder than ever and had been pigeonholed into very similar roles again and again. Feels reminiscent even of the Elvis Presley stuff we were talking about, that back years ago, decades ago, you would end up just in the one role over and over again. Clara wanted to do dramas, anything different from the repetitive comedies that she was stuck in. But, you know, why would Paramount change the winning formula? She was selling out theatres. It was very much the rinse and repeat strategy.
As a result, Clara decided she would be done with the movie industry once her contract expired in 1931. Just as a reminder, it's 1927 at this point. So she decided she would settle down, get married and start a family in about 4 years once the movies were done. As for who she would marry, well, she actually secretly hoped that that man would be Earl Pearson, despite the fact at this point he was married.
Dr. Earl Pearson, yes. Now, something else was happening around this time in 1927 that we need to briefly touch upon. Clara's father, Robert Beau, married her best friend, the 21-year-old Tui Lorraine. And from what we can tell, Tui's hands were kind of tied when it came to this situation. It doesn't seem like she actually really wanted to marry her best friend's father. She desperately needed a US visa. She was originally from New Zealand. And marrying Robert Beau felt like her only option. He was obviously a gross old man and had already tried hitting on her quite a lot in the past since she was always with Clara.
Yeah, Robert also lied about his age on the marriage certificate, not for the first time, saying he was 45 when he was actually 53. Things are a bit complicated, naturally, with this union. Robert loved the idea of a young bride. Clara was stoked that her best friend and her father were now together, even though her best friend was now her 21-year-old stepmother. But the rumor was, to make this all the more complicated, was that Tui was actually in love with Clara.
Yeah, and it's not just a baseless rumor either. In his research, David Sten unearthed a quote from Tui that she made to another actor that seemed to confirm this. As the story goes, this actor gently teased Tui about the nature of her friendship with Clara Beau. In response, Tui apparently said, "Clara adores men only, heterosexual to the core, you know."
Clara was completely oblivious to Tui's, you know, reported feelings on this. Unable to control himself, though, Robert began affairs with multiple women. After Toohey quite literally caught him in the act with one of these women, the couple got divorced. Loyal to her father to the very end, Clara cut Toohey out of her life after that. Now, we're going to have to leave it here for now, Mish, because we've got so much more to cover. In our next episode, we need to talk a lot more about Earl Pearson.
Dr. Earl.
That affair and how it just about brings Clara's career to a crashing halt.
Yeah, and what happened when these silent movies suddenly got sound. Yeah. But all of that on next week's episode.
You can, by the way, listen to it right now if you like, if you subscribe.
Plug.
If you subscribe to Shane Moore. Type in Shane Moore. You can get this episode right now. We drop all our Scandal series on the same day if you'd like to binge them in one go. If not, no stress. Well, this will be back in your ears on Monday. A big thank you, as always, to our pop culture journalist, Eilish Gilligan.
Thank you, Gil.
For doing her wonderful work on this one. And our audio producer, Annabelle Lee. We will be back in your ears on Thursday for another wrap in the week that was in pop culture. And as I said, Monday for part two.
Bye, guys.
See ya.
Shameless Media.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Oh, hi, it's Annabelle Lee and Louis Hansen here. We are your hosts of Everybody Has a Secret.
Woo!
Woo! We are here essentially just to let you know that we drop episodes every week now. Every damn Friday morning, we are in your ears.
That is so exciting. What a time to be in your ear holes. So essentially, each episode, we unpack the real life secrets of our listeners. So this is for everyone who loves, you know, just a little bit of gossip in their lives, which, let's be real, Annabelle, is all of us.
It's absolutely all of us. Don't lie. You all love gossip. So if you want to listen to our show, please do head to your favourite podcast app and listen now.
See you there.
Bye.